Chris Bitterly was a Spanish literature and econ double major here and is now the head of investments for North America at Citi Global Wealth. How'd she do it? She studied what she was passionate about and never let the stress of getting a job change the way she approached her education. Chris is one of the most successful, authentic, and genuine people I have ever spoken with, and I'm so excited to share her story with you all. Enjoy the episode. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of You're Probably Okay. I'm so excited to host today's guest, Chris Bitterly. Chris was a Spanish literature and econ double major here and is now the head of investments for North America at Citi Global Wealth. She's no stranger to media platforms of this magnitude, as you can often find her on CNBC. So she's a natural when it comes to handling hard-hitting interviews. We're very excited to have her. Chris, thank you so much for sitting down with Lucy and I today.
Oh my goodness, thank you for the invitation. It's really nice to be here.
Absolutely. We're so excited to have you. The buzz on campus so far for this episode is pretty high, so I'm excited to release it. So Chris, on the show, we talk about the stress students often face when it comes to getting through school and navigating the career development process at the same time. And if I had to pick a song lyric that could sum up how our students are feeling during their college years, I might pick the line, "I Will Get By" in Grateful Dead's Touch of Grey. As a former Deadhead yourself from Central PA, I think our listeners would love to hear how you wound up at Notre Dame and how a poem by Garcia Lorca led you to being a Spanish literature and econ major here.
Sure. Another song I would quote is Under Pressure by Queen and David Bowie. I think that would probably summarize it. But yeah, just a little bit of background about me and how I ended up at Notre Dame and studying economics and Spanish literature. And I love that you started this with a Grateful Dead reference, but very true. I grew up in central Pennsylvania in a small town of about 4,000 people. It's a great town called Danville, Pennsylvania. So if you are traveling on Route 80 from New York to Notre Dame or kind of crossing through Pennsylvania, you'll hit our town. Growing up, I didn't really have a lot of exposure to finance. So one of the things that I think is really interesting is oftentimes within my industry, you hear a lot of stories of someone who knew they wanted to be a banker, knew they wanted to go into finance or investing because they had exposure to it growing up. I had exposure to a medical family. My dad was a doctor, my mom was a nurse, and I had a lot of exposure to that profession. I thought about going into that profession, but ultimately I ended up here. So how did I get here? I think, you know, growing up, I had a lot of different influences. Spanish was one of them. So I read a poem by Garcia Lorca, as you noted, when I was sometime in middle school. I read a poem and it was such a beautiful poem and I wanted to read it in Spanish. And so I embarked upon studying Spanish, just like many people do, just taking classes at school and then really getting the travel bug and trying to find ways of getting over to Europe. Interestingly enough, my first experience in Europe was not in Spanish. It was actually in French. I went as part of a summer study abroad program and spent some time in a rural area of France playing tennis and learning French as well. And that was kind of like the beginning of the end for me in terms of wanting to pursue languages and finding ways to get to know different countries and cultures. And so I always knew that languages would be part of my passion and purpose and finding ways to travel. Grateful Dead had nothing to do with my decision to go to Notre Dame, unfortunately. There's no connectivity that I can bridge there. I was always into music. I played piano and clarinet growing up. Fun fact, I was part of the marching band. I played clarinet in the marching band at Notre Dame. But music was also just a really, really big influence. However, my kind of path to Notre Dame was, I would say I was brainwashed at a very early age. My father was a Notre Dame graduate. And from, I don't remember the first time I visited campus, but I'm sure I was a very young toddler probably when I visited campus. And so this was something that we knew and loved growing up. We watched all the football games. I always joke that my father, I think all of the clothing that he owns has some type of Notre Dame logo on it. And he's definitely keeping the bookstore in business. So Notre Dame was a big influence growing up, but as are all those other things that you mentioned too, which really brought me to campus a long time ago.
And I love how you talk about major, passion major versus practical major. And so I love, did you feel stress when you picked Spanish literature, did you look at major in terms of a means to an end or just something you loved and wanted to study?
You know, kind of going back to my parents and my family and upbringing, I'm very lucky to have parents who have always been very supportive of anything that I wanted to pursue, as long as it wasn't dangerous. Like, our one rule growing up was we were not allowed to go on motorcycles. That was the one rule we were not allowed to break. But in terms of what I wanted to study, what I wanted to pursue, I think that my parents were very good about, as long as you have passion and purpose. So as long as you find something that you're passionate about, you can find purpose, you're driven, you have a strong work ethic, it really didn't matter what it was. So I think what's fascinating is my parents, as long as I was happy, I was driven, I was excelling and succeeding, they really weren't part of that decision as to what was going to be my major. So they were extremely supportive that they knew that I wanted to study Spanish language and literature. They were very supportive when they also found out that I wanted to study economics. And really, it was more just about like how they could support me in that. So I didn't find any type of stress in picking my major. I knew that, you know, as long as I was doing well and I was learning and I was cultivating skill sets that would then serve me down the road, I would have the support of my family, which I'm really fortunate to have to this day.
That's amazing. I feel like a lot of students in arts and letters would appreciate that your parents were so understanding and so supportive. My parents, too, were very supportive of me choosing anthropology as my primary major, so I'm very grateful for that as well. You mentioned that both your parents worked in the medical field, and it sounds like they didn't put a lot of pressure on you in choosing both major or career. So I know you had plans to take the GRE, and you weren't really thinking about banking as a career path. Can you tell us about how you ended up in the banking industry and some of your early experiences with interviewing with major firms such as EY, and how studying abroad in Spain was a game changer for you?
Yeah, so I had no intention of coming into finance. My senior year, I took the GRE, actually. I took the GRE, and my plan was to apply to PhD programs and pursue a career in Spanish language and literature. And I felt that I could really combine what I had learned on campus at Notre Dame, and I traveled abroad as well. I went to Spain. I did the Toledo program, which is still in existence to this day. And I also took advantage of, I was one of the first, I think if not the first class that went to Puebla, Mexico at Notre Dame. And so kind of continuing that travel and Spanish bug, I was able to pursue that. But ultimately what happened was my senior year, I utilized the Career Center, and they were very influential in what happened next. So the Career Center told me, you know what, I know you think that you have it all figured out and you're going to pursue a PhD. However, why don't you just get practice interviewing? It's a great skill to learn. It's something that's going to serve you no matter what career you choose. So why don't we do some interviews, apply to some jobs that you find interesting. And so I applied to any job that had international in the title. So anything that could somehow get me back outside of the United States, ideally utilize some of the Spanish language. And I had a couple of interviews. I will tell you that first one was with Ernst & Young. And I bombed it. It was not a good experience at all. I really didn't understand what the job was. It was much more driven and aligned for someone who had studied accounting. But because it had that international piece, I was like, all right, let me go for it. And it was an eye-opening experience for me. I was not prepared. I didn't really know how to go into that interview. And so the Career Center was absolutely right. You got to practice a lot in terms of jobs that maybe aren't your dream job. And so I was encouraged by someone who was at the Career Center to apply for a program that at that moment was offered by Bank One that was called the Scholars Program. And they specifically targeted and recruited arts and letters majors. And the idea was that arts and letters majors possess certain skills that maybe you can't acquire on the job. It's a way of thinking, it's problem solving, communication skills. And then they would complement that type of education with more technical finance education by getting your MBA either at Kellogg or the University of Chicago. And then since coming out of school, you didn't necessarily know what area of finance you wanted to end up in, you would do rotations. So we did 5 to 6 six-month rotations in any area of the bank. And so I went into that interview process, and because they were recruiting arts and letters majors, I actually felt a lot more confident. I was like, okay, I know what I know when it comes to my areas of economics and Spanish language and literature. And I think throughout that process, you know, there's a lot of luck involved. Sometimes it's skill, sometimes it's luck. One of the women who was on the interview panel, her daughter was studying abroad in Spain at that time. And we really connected personally about that. I gave her several tips about, you know, my experience in Spain and living abroad. And so we created a really tight personal connection. And I'm not saying that got me the job. It was, you know, one 30-minute interview. But obviously that was something that made me stand out in the interview process. So you never know how this collection of experiences that make you different from the other applicants can really help you land any type of opportunity, whether it's a job or an opportunity to work on something. So I saw that as, you know, the sun, moon, and stars aligning, because I could still get my master's degree. And this was a way where I wasn't signing up permanently for a job in finance. I could do this exploratory every 6 months, my job changed. So even if I hated it, I knew that I was going to end up with my MBA at the end of it and a really, really strong experience in various disciplines in finance. So I ended up going for it and thought I could always come back to, if it's really awful, I'll just get my PhD in Spanish literature and then pursue teaching.
I think it's funny too that you said you bombed the first one, so you went back and practiced, but then in the end, you just made that personal connection in the next one that probably made the difference. And I know you're big on differentiators. Come here and spoke to us a few weeks ago, and that was your big thing, was how do you stand out? How do you differentiate yourself? So I love that you said that. I think that the industry that you work in can seem kind of unattainable to a lot of students in A&L. I think it's an industry that when we look at the values, we feel like it values the hard skills and not so much those differentiators and some of those softer, more personal connectivity connections that you make. So I know it's very stressful to try to break in. You've been incredibly successful in the field. And I know you often credit your Spanish literature major and background for a big reason why. When you think about self-confidence, it's hard for students to put themselves in a position to embrace confidence. And can you talk a little bit about what skills you think A&L students have that are inherently great for your industry, how they apply, and just sort of how students can early on find ways to start embracing that confidence and sort of shooting their shot to break in?
Jared, what you said about confidence, I think that's the lesson that I've learned throughout, you know, the past 2+ decades, is going into that interview process that I mentioned, where the first interviews I bombed, I did not perform well. But then this idea of really kind of creating that confidence. What was so nice about that connection that I made with this woman at the time was she made it about something that she knew I should be able to speak confidently about, and something that, whether this was intentional or not, I always love asking people in an interview when it talks about interests and hobbies, that section of a resume, that's something that someone consciously put on there as something that makes them different, makes them stand out. And you want to pull that out. What is an area that, because a lot of what the technical skills, I believe this, you can learn on the job. A lot of the various roles that we have within finance, a lot of it's an apprenticeship model. You need to sit on a trading desk. You need to sit on next to someone who's a phenomenal salesperson to really learn and break that down. And so while some of the technical training that you can have in pursuing a university degree can definitely make sure that you have a little bit of a head start, a lot of what happens is on the job and that apprenticeship model. And so I think that, you know, ultimately arts and letters majors, in going into this, acknowledging what makes them confident, what makes them different. And so what I like to think that my arts and letters education taught me is it really taught me how to think, how to problem solve, how to communicate. And when we think of some of the biggest challenges that we have, and it doesn't matter what area of business you're in, we're in an environment where we're constantly disrupting things and innovating, and it's so fast paced and changing so much. So this is no longer a static environment where you learn something once and that prepares you for that static job for the rest of your life. This is something where we have to create a framework for addressing a constantly changing world. And that framework, for example, what I learned in, and I'll say Spanish language, because Jared, I know you and I talked about this previously, Once I realized when I came into finance and when I came into, I actually tried to pursue in those 6 month rotations, one of those rotations was in derivatives. And the reason I picked it was I wanted to do the scariest thing that I thought I could do. So my first rotations, I think, were a little safe. I'm like, let me ease into this. And then I said, you know what? I have to do this. It's 6 months. Let's try to figure this out. And so once I realized with derivatives that it was like a language, it was vernacular and terminology, that I just needed to be able to translate that and translate it back to a lot of concepts that I learned in statistics and in econ. Once I learned that translation and that language, the concepts were actually very familiar to me. And so I think sometimes that intimidation factor when you're coming into something, you're like, wait, I know how to speak foreign languages. I've learned how to play musical instruments. I have learned how to break down pretty complex things in my statistics classes. I put all of that together and I said, wow, not only is this something that I thought was going to be super challenging, but my formation and what I learned in my degree has so prepared me for this. And not only do I like it, I love it. I think it's a really creative area. And so I went from being someone who didn't even know that job existed, let's say a couple years prior, to saying this is an area where it's using my creative brain, my language brain, my math brain, and bringing all of this together in a really rewarding part of the industry that, as I said, I didn't know existed previously.
I love how you put that too. Maybe that'll be the title of the episode. Derivatives are like learning another language. It's true. It sounds like, is that something you kind of learned after the fact, or is that something you kind of going into it? Did you ever think that learning clarinet and learning Spanish was going to help you in banking?
No. But I don't think you realize a lot of the things, like how valuable those skills are, until you really put them to use. I will also give you a recent example. So my econ degree, very theoretical, right? So econ, I know that I studied econ within the arts and letters school. So very theoretical. Again, it's a framework, right? So when you say something is theoretical, it's a framework for how you approach complex problems. Look at what the world has lived through over the past couple of years in terms of a pandemic, high inflation in the US, understanding what financial tightening does in terms of what the Fed has done in terms of raising interest rates. What I learned in that major a really, really long time ago is so applicable to being able to break down what's happening in the global economy today. In other market cycles and in other economic cycles, maybe not as relevant or as front of mind, but that is certainly something that it wasn't even dormant. It was always there. And I had, again, not something that I memorized, not facts that I memorized, but a framework for breaking down complex conditions, which then creates an opportunity for you to be able to ask questions, to question yourself too. Do I really understand this? Is there more that I have to learn? Are there other areas where I need to follow up? And so I think the other thing, just kind of thinking of like, what do some of these things teach you, whether it's language, whether it's music, whether it's even econ, or you could even expand this to other parts of arts and letters, those areas where there isn't a right answer. Right. So there's certain disciplines where you're going to have a right answer and there's only one right answer. A lot of what I learned was kind of how to defend my thesis, how to defend my hypothesis, realizing that there could be multiple solutions to the same problem and you're going to have to iterate. And so I think that having the confidence to kind of do that iteration and to, you know, fail, but fail fast and then revisit a problem and tackle it from a different angle, I think that only exists in certain disciplines. And so it's, again, it's something that I didn't know at the time, but I think has been wildly valuable.
Kind of going off of that, talk a little bit about like the banking industry and how there's so much pressure to start early. And a lot of people feel like they failed to get onto the jump when everyone's doing their junior internships by their sophomore year, they have it all sorted. So talk about how like banking is such a, there's so much pressure to start early.
I think like it seems that every year things recruiting has become earlier and earlier. You probably know better than I do. But when I was at school, having incredibly supportive parents, I did a summer service project one summer. So they, again, they wanted passion and purpose and being productive. But I did a summer service project, which was amazing, worked close to the border between US and Mexico. And then my following internship was actually at the US Embassy in Madrid. So I did, thinking I was potentially, if I wasn't gonna go into a Spanish language and literature, maybe a career in the Foreign Service would be something that would be great for me. I learned in that internship actually that wasn't a career I wanted to pursue, but that was great. That was a great experience. I learned a lot and I realized that I had a lot of assumptions about that career that I didn't really know until I got there. And so it helped me eliminate something as opposed to saying, I'm just gonna go then dive in and pursue this. So I think it's really hard. I don't know how someone would do it. And I admire people who do. This idea that knowing exactly what you want to do when you're in your freshman year or sophomore year, I think it's an almost unfair ask of many people, because the experiences that I had, as I just mentioned, taught me about things that I didn't want to do. And so this idea that you have to have so much confidence and conviction early on, I think it's fantastic for people who know that, but I think it's unrealistic that most people are going to. And so it is very true that there is a process. There are summer internships. Those summer internships can then lead to full-time offers. And especially in very specific areas like investment banking and sales and trading, a lot of that is heavily structured. That aside, I do think that there are so many roles though within financial services, asset management, investment management. And so there are ways, if you're curious about this industry and maybe you feel that you've been late to the game, the ways to break into this industry, it doesn't always have to be through one of those internship programs or analyst programs. There are ways of getting entry-level positions at different types of institutions and different types of areas of finance, even if it means working outside some of the major centers, going to a regional office, getting into a firm that you want to work for, and then finding a way to transfer into one of those programs. So there's numerous paths if this is what you want to do. And I think that finding ways of exploring that, whether it's through some of these formal programs, which of course are great, and they're really good apprenticeship programs and really great training programs. But if you're someone who didn't have that experience or didn't know that you wanted to do that in your freshman or sophomore year, finding ways of reaching out, proactively networking, what's one of the greatest benefits of Notre Dame? The network. The network's incredible. So find someone that you admire, you look up to. LinkedIn is a great resource too. I'm always so impressed with the people who reach out proactively on LinkedIn to learn more. So take advantage of that network and then find ways of breaking in. And it doesn't always have to be a conventional path.
I love that. I think it's so cool how you've emerged as this rising star in an industry that's very dominated by men. And you were just talking about mentorship and how important it is to find mentors in your industry and how much they've helped you. You've also, in previous conversation, we've talked about how there's many times where you're the only person in the room with your own perspective. And so what have been or still are some of the challenges for women in your industry? And what advice would you give female students who are hoping to take the path that you did?
So I would say our industry has come a really long way. That being said, we have a lot more work to do. And when you look at the different types of roles, there's so much diversity in terms of the types of roles that you can pursue. And there's certain roles that you can see. Now we have very, very strong representation of women at all levels in the organization. And there's other roles. And I would say it tends to be the more technical one. It tends to be the more quantitative ones where we don't have as much representation as we need. And so that's something that we as an industry are very consciously aware of, but it starts early, right? It starts very, very early in the process in terms of making sure that we are recruiting, attracting diverse talent, that we are encouraging women to pursue careers within finance and investing and not shying away. So when I brought up that example of the derivatives rotation and why I was able to pursue it. The reason I was able to pursue it was because it was 6 months. And I thought, you know what, there's no risk to this. Even if I fail at this, I'll fail fast and then I'll realize I can do something else. And so I had, again, the support of my family. I also had this idea that nothing was permanent. So let me put myself into a situation where if I am the minority in the room, that's okay. I'm going to find a way to communicate. I'm going to find a way to also given how far the industry has come, it's very, very different. But I think now, you mentioned early in the program that I do a lot of media. The reason why I do a lot of media was I had noticed that there weren't enough female voices talking about markets, talking about the economy. And so oftentimes when you see female voices, they may talk about what it's like to be a female in this industry instead of talking about their expertise. And so what I'm really passionate about is that people see me as not a female in this industry, even though I am, but someone who is very credible, very successful in this industry, and someone who knows how to talk about markets and the economy. And then the more that we have that voice and people can see that, wow, this is the face of someone who's talking about what you should do with your investments, how to break down the macroeconomic conditions. If that can encourage more women to pursue a career and very confidently do it, then I hope I've, even at a micro level, made an impact.
That was amazing. I completely understand like where you're coming from with that. And I think it's so important to have more representation in these industries and just showing that like you're not just a woman in this industry, you're just an expert in this industry. Yeah. That just happens.
And I think there's also a piece of it in being authentic to yourself and not pretending that you're someone else. So my personality is one where I like to laugh a lot. I am an optimist. I am someone who is very warm and compassionate. And I don't have to hide that part of me. So even if you see the media interviews that I do, I sound exactly like I sound right now. And I'm just talking about the economy and I'm talking about markets and I find humor and humility in things. And then there's certain points that I want to come across in a little bit of a stronger fashion. But I think now what is so great about all of the change that has happened is this idea that yes, there's going to be different voices that sometimes you want to use depending upon the room, depending upon whether you're speaking to an internal approval committee or a board. There may be a slightly different style, but if you are constantly pretending that you're someone else, it is going to be really hard to be successful. So finding ways to say, okay, this is something where I feel very comfortable, I feel confident, because that confidence is really what's going to drive a lot of your success in any field. And so you've got to find those pockets where you feel that you have the support. We talked about sponsorship a little bit, but where you have the support and you feel confident and you're not hiding who you are. I think that's where you have the sun, moon, and stars aligning to really create a successful career trajectory.
Wow. That was really cool.
No, yeah, it's just genuine.
Yeah, it is. I can tell it's so authentic. Okay, so just very briefly, going back to finding mentors and finding people to help support you find that confidence in yourself to be who you actually are. How did you pick out your mentors? What were you looking for? How did you reach out to them?
So my advice on this, and this is true whether you're still at school, whether you're navigating your career, I think you find in micro interactions. So this doesn't have to be, okay, I found the perfect mentor. There are daily interactions that you have where you can reach out to someone and say, wow, I was really inspired by this. You heard someone speak at a conference. You heard someone present in a meeting. You heard someone give a presentation in one of your classes and you were just really impressed and you want to emulate something that they have. I think reaching out, it never hurts to compliment someone who doesn't like to take a compliment from time to time and say, I was really impressed with how you did that. I want to learn more about you and your career, how you were able to do that. I think that, because then you're basically creating almost like a board, like an inspiration board of these are people who I think are really phenomenal at what they do. And it doesn't have to be the whole package. It doesn't have to be like, this is the perfect job that I want. It could just be, like I said, it can be a skill set that they have. Maybe they're great at negotiating. Maybe they're great in client meetings. Maybe they're great at big public presentations. And so that's how I really started finding my mentors, is I would do that proactive outreach. Someone who I'm very close to this day, I remember reaching out to him. We didn't work together. We didn't work directly together, but I saw him present at a larger forum. And he was just one of the most compelling storytellers I had ever heard. And again, it was a very authentic voice, very, very authentic voice. And he did it his way. And he made finance seem so accessible and so down to earth. And it was a memorable presentation. And I was like, I need to get to know this person and understand more about their career and understand how they approach presenting and really kind of capturing the audience. So I think you find people who inspire you, you find people who you want to be like, and then doing that outreach. And sometimes those relationships click, sometimes they don't, but then you have this inspiration board of people that you want to emulate and you want to grow into. And I think that helps then form you as like a full human. It's not just about your technical skills. It's not just about climbing a ladder in a linear fashion. It's about really the full you and the full picture.
Yeah, that's so cool. I also want to give you this opportunity to plug City's D1 athlete program, especially because we have so many D1 athletes and student athletes here at Notre Dame. Yeah, could you talk a little bit more about why City decided to do this and what it looks like?
Of course. So this is something in terms of our recruiting efforts and making sure that we're reaching as diverse of an audience as possible. When you think of D1 athletes, a lot of D1 athletes, they're not able to do summer internships in a traditional way. And so they may need to be on campus for training. And so it's not that they don't want to pursue certain careers, it's just that the obligations of being an athlete take them away from some of the kind of traditional methods to pursuing a job after graduation. And so I was recently on campus where we were having a number of meetings about a mentorship program, which is a 6-month mentorship program that targets Division I athletes. So Notre Dame is one of those schools. And we want to do what we're doing in this mentorship program is really, it's multifaceted. It's giving you an idea of what are the various careers that are available in finance. How should you approach the interview process? So going back to the fact that I bombed my interview, let's make sure that others don't. How would you go about doing a stock pitch or presentation? So it's everything from like cultivating both hard skills as well as soft skills, really gaining an understanding of the industry and being paired with a mentor who's going to help you navigate this. And so as we think about, we want to make sure that we have diverse representation in terms of experiences, in addition to diversity in terms of diversity, equity, and inclusion. This is a great way of going about it. And what I have found, I was in the band, which, you know, some could argue is almost like a sport. There's a lot of discipline in what you have to do.
In terms of time commitment.
Yeah. I know there's some giggles about that, but the Notre Dame band's very athletic. It's very athletic.
Marching
what you have to do. Yeah.
You guys are out there all the time.
All the time. You are practicing all the time. But I think that type of time management, and so you think of what an athlete has to do before they go to class, after class, like there is such a balance of your academic workload and then also your training workload. That's another great discipline, right? Like, so we were talking about arts and letters majors and how it's teaching you how to think and teaching you a discipline around how you approach a problem and problem solving. The same thing I think can be said about athletes in terms of, you know, just that discipline and scheduling and a work ethic and working hard. And also like teamwork and complex problem solving exists there too. So we're really excited about this. And it's something that's new for us. And I'm so happy that we're partnering with Notre Dame on this.
I know my athlete friends in Mendoza are going to be so excited, and arts and life.
Amazing.
They just happen to be in Mendoza. Chris, this time with you has been so fun, and we cannot thank you enough. We have reached the final segment of our show, which we will each ask you 3 rapid-fire questions to get your
responses.
Jared and I have affectionately named this segment the Fast 3 with Jared and Lucy. Jared named it.
It's sweeping campus is the most popular piece of media out there. So, Chris,
Love it.
First question, what is the biggest impact technology is going to have on your industry in the next 5 years?
Biggest impact that technology is going to have over the next 5 years is really this concept of advisor-led but technology-enabled. And so what I mean by that is we want what can be served by technology and what can be self-service and what can be digital to be digital. And then this ability for the advisor to spend time doing what you really need a human being to do. And so particularly within wealth management, there are certain things that are almost like ordering pizza from Seamless Grubhub, right? Like there's something that you don't want to talk to a person for that. You want to be able to do it yourself. And so I think that is going to be like a very, very interesting, what do you want a human for? And where do you value that advice versus what are you like, you know what? I don't need to pick up the phone and call to order a pizza. I'd rather just go to the next restaurant.
That's a good point. That's really, yeah.
Kind of building off that last question. I know this is not part of our script, but what role do you think generative AI is going to play in your industry?
I think a significant role based on what I just said. So there is a lot of curation of information that's required in breaking down complex financial concepts. And so the ability to distill that down into the most salient concepts, I think, is really important. I think there's also an element of understanding behaviors and understanding. So this could be more of the machine learning, but this idea that as you're interacting more and as you're investing more, the idea that we can automatically promote different types of strategies that are relevant for you, depending upon where you are in your wealth journey or where you are in terms of life planning, like having children and different types of steps and actions that you're going to need. I think there's such an important place for it.
I just love that one quote you said earlier, client-led, technology-enabled. I'm writing that down. Have a conversation with my dad about that later. So this afternoon, you've given us great advice for our students to follow. What advice do you think college students should ignore?
I think, and it's kind of a continuation of what we just discussed, I think this idea that you're going to have it all figured out in college is too much pressure. So we talked in a conversation about the future of work, and the future of work, this idea that, again, you learn, and then you stop learning and you've just kind of embarked upon this career and it's set it, forget it. I think that is, you have the ability to reinvent yourself. You're one decision away from honestly changing your entire life and trajectory in a good way. You don't have to have it all figured out right now. You need to learn. You need to be open to new experiences. You need to work on yourself, but you don't need to have the next 20 years figured out.
And then going off that, when you do become a professional in your industry, what are the bad recommendations you often hear people giving to people?
Continuation of this, I would say that, and this is a very interesting dichotomy for me, because I think on one hand, you know, sometimes we fail to plan, right? So I think like there is a really, really important part of your career navigation where you need to recognize that no one cares more about your career than you do. And so it doesn't mean you're not gonna have sponsors. It doesn't mean that you're not gonna have mentors. It doesn't mean that you're not gonna have this amazing kind of support and energy around you, but it's your career. So you need to take ownership over it. And so this idea that, just think about how much you plan early on in life. You plan so much. Just think about how much planning you did to get into Notre Dame. You did a lot of planning. You planned for like the SATs or ACTs. I don't even know. I'm going to have to learn this for my children as to like what the right tests are and like what you need to do. I'm out of practice. But you do so much planning, and then all of a sudden you get a job and you stop planning. And so I think the important thing is you need to plan and you need to be very intentional. It's table stakes to be good at your current role. So you always want to have your sight on, okay, my current role, I want to perform and I want to perform well, but you should have a plan. And here's the thing that I think is maybe the unconventional or advice that you shouldn't follow. You don't need to stick to that plan. Environments change, the conditions change, your life can change too. So this idea that you can pivot. If something changes that then changes your trajectory, that's not weakness. Actually, changing can be an immense sign of strength.
Our producer, Corey, keeps nodding the whole time. He's listening in on the. It's resonating.
It is resonating. That's great. I mean, Taylor Swift once said, fail to plan, you plan to fail. But at the same time, it makes so much sense. Like, you don't actually have to follow through with your plan. It's just, it's an it's nice to like think about your future in that way and like always be thinking about the next step. But as you said, environments change, people change, industries change. So
just think about investing, right? So as someone who advises people on how to invest, markets change, economic conditions change. Imagine we had a plan for an investor and just was like, sorry, we set up this plan, so we're sticking with it. If you don't take into account those extraneous factors and things that may be out of your control, but they're changing, I just think there's such an interesting concept that exists within corporate America more broadly, that if you make a change, it's a sign of weakness. And I actually think it's an amazing sign of strength. You made a decision, and let's say it's the wrong one, whether it's about your career, whether it's about something that you did from a business standpoint, you made a decision, you identify it's the wrong one, fail fast, right? And then that to me is saying, okay, I take ownership of this, I'm accountable for it, and I have a plan forward, and this is why this is not gonna work. There's so many ways, so many areas you can apply that to. It's just that concept, which is becoming, I think, a little outdated, is like conviction, and you need to show strength and you need to kind of power through it and force something to work, whether it's your career trajectory or whether it's your performance in your job. I think having that type of, again, maybe this is something Arts and Letters teaches you, having that framework to problem solve and really pivot, I think is again, a beautiful sign of strength.
I completely agree. I love that. My second question for you is, we kind of went over this earlier, but what are your podcast recommendations? Let's do top three.
So I will say my top one of all time, which I'm just going to continue talking about this. I love Armchair Expert. I think Dax Shepard does a brilliant job on it. And what I really, really like is the fact that it's all different types of people that they interview on that show. So it's, if you're not familiar with it, it's authors. Like, I learn a lot from listening to that. One that I recently discovered, which I also think is fantastic, is the Founders Podcast. Have you guys listened to this? Which is a fantastic one. And it's about entrepreneurship. And the gentleman who does it is just like, this idea of being obsessed with something and having a passion with something and what unites all entrepreneurs. And it's an overview of really kind of the biographies of really, really successful entrepreneurs. And I love reading biographies. So it's almost, you know, this is a way to listen to it on a podcast. And then I would say, you know, I'm a really big fan of the NPR ones. I know we talked about this as well. I think NPR just does beautiful programming. And they do a really, really great job. Planet Money, I think, is a great podcast that breaks down complicated concepts in such a digestible format and makes a lot of concepts in econ and finance so accessible. So that's another one I would recommend.
It was implied that You're Probably Okay is your absolute favorite podcast.
Yeah.
Right. So those were the top three besides
ours.
Yes.
Of course. It's like present company excluded. That would be too strong of a bias. We couldn't have that.
All right, my final question for you. You got one song to play someone to convince them to be a Grateful Dead fan. What song are you playing them?
That is a great question.
This can be directed to me because I don't think I've ever really heard any Grateful Dead songs, but I will listen to one.
You got
to
hook Lucy with one song.
I'm going to go with Uncle John's Band.
Uncle John's Band. What a name.
I am. I think you'll enjoy it. It's great musicianship. The thing is their music is so diverse. There's some that's like very jazz influenced. And so my favorite song is a song called Doing That Rag, which is maybe, if you need an introduction to the Grateful Dead, that may not be the best one. So I'm gonna go Uncle John's Band.
Okay. We'll work on getting the rights to make it the intro music of this episode.
That may be hard.
I'm looking forward to giving it a listen. So Chris, what are you most excited about right now professionally?
Oh, I'm so, like, I honestly, like, every day I wake up very excited about the opportunity that we have here at Citi, and particularly within our global wealth business. I am so excited about the investments that we're making, the growth that we've seen in the business, the leadership that we have in place, And it is an area within financial services that is growing, and it's growing in a really meaningful way. And it's also the impact, it's a people business, and the impact that you're able to make on individuals' lives. So one of the things that we didn't discuss, but I think is really interesting, is I kind of worked my way, kind of navigating my roles within finance. I've covered all different types of clients, and I always found it so rewarding to cover wealth management, because you're dealing with individuals and you're dealing with their goals for their wealth. And you're dealing with people who are so brilliant and so amazing, but they may not have exposure or experience investing their own money or navigating financial markets. So this ability that, you know, you create these really, really amazing relationships and rewarding relationships, and you can connect with someone and teach them something, and they can teach you something. So I think from a professional standpoint, the industry that I'm in, and the job particularly in serving individuals, I think is incredible. So it motivates me. And also I learn something every single day.
Always got to be a lifelong learner.
Exactly.
That is so inspiring. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today and sharing your story. I definitely speak for my fellow students when I say it's been incredibly motivating to hear from you, and we're so fortunate to have you as a part of our Notre Dame network. I would love to hear what's next for you. You're clearly so excited. You're very excited about all the work that you do. What are you working on right now, and how can we help you achieve your goals?
That's a great question. Well, continue driving interest to City, particularly within our wealth. Like, we want all of the talent. And no, I'm not biased, because I mentioned all of the different careers that you could have across finance. But I do think what we have in terms of our culture, our leadership, is something that's really unique. So I would say, anyone who is interested, reach out. That's, you know, we want to continue attracting and developing top talent in the industry. And then I would also say, maybe you guys can help me train, you know, and try to figure out, I have two boys, they're 9 years old and 6 years old. And so if anyone, you know, has any tips on like how to get into Notre Dame down the road, I'm gonna need some help. I'm gonna need some help. So if you guys think of any advice I can give my sons, don't worry, I'm not brainwashing them this early on, but the brainwashing will happen sometime soon.
It'll be funny. I was thinking about it. So I have a 10-month-old, and most of my career now is geared towards telling students to choose your own path, relax, don't worry. And I wonder if, as a parent, if I'll be that, like, also kind of hands on. And I just love how you talked about how your parents kind of let you do your own thing, guided you, but still kind of trusted you. And is you think
I earned their trust too. It's like a balance. And I think it's such an interesting dance that you have as a parent. I think it's one of those things where you're trying to help guide someone. So talking about planning, my husband and I, when our first son was born, you know, it's like, what kind of parents are we going to be? And it's, you know, something that's so important, but like, you kind of learn on the job. Talk about learning on the job. That's like, I mean, Jared, you know, a 10-month-old, you're like thrown into it. And we're like, you know what? We want our kids to be like passionate. We want them to have purpose, and we want them to be kind. So they need to be kind and contribute to society in that sense. But really just passion and purpose. And so I think my parents, like I said, very grateful. They're both incredible people. Wicked smart, both of them. But they had this distance, right? Where I earned their trust, but it was, okay, she's fine. Yep, she wants to go to France and do this exchange program. Cool. And that was back in the day when we didn't have cell phones. So just to be clear, my mom just put me on a plane. She was just like, go. Like, here's the plane. And you had a calling card that you had to use from a payphone. I got to talk to her like once a week. So I hope I can have like that degree of confidence and trust, and also that my kids feel that as well. Because I think, again, going back to that, what we were saying, to be successful in life, your personal life, your professional life, this idea of being really comfortable and confident in your own skin. I mean, is there anything better than that?
No, Chris. Yeah. This is good. Thank you so much for such an honest, genuine conversation. This has been so much fun. I really appreciate you taking the time today.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. It was so much fun, and I hope the message resonates, and look forward to a very long and continued relationship with Notre Dame.
Excellent. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.